Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Are you one of many Americans who are tired of people being bullied and discriminated? You are not alone. Bullying has a rippling effect on the person who is being harassed and everyone associated with the bullied person. The targeted adult or child may have been physically or psychologically bullied. They often bring home their anguish with them, and this can have a crippling effect on everyone associated with the one who's being bullied or discriminated. It's time to shed some light on how to reduce bullying in the school systems, how to create safe and healthy work environments for employees. I blow the whistle on how to protect yourself if you're being bullied and educate listeners on their rights if they're being bullied or discriminated. I bring in the best experts who provide empowering strategies, tips on resiliency, how to handle the experience of being bullied or discriminated, how to heal and overcome the effects of being mistreated. If you are ready to gain knowledge and insights on bullying and discrimination, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Hi, and welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. I'm your host, Dawn Westmoreland. You know, it's really exciting when you talk to other coaches because you learn so much from other coaches that niche in other areas. Today's life coach is Sarah Zarin, and Sarah has a very interesting background because with each of us coaches, you know, we usually have a story why we become a life coach or a business coach, and oftentimes we niche in experiences that we've had. So I want to bring on Sarah, and let me tell you a little bit about her. She's been a clinical therapist at the Queens Medical Center Outpatient Dual Diagnosis Center in Honolulu, Hawaii, and she runs a coaching and counseling business and helps people live more fully using a hybrid approach to personal development. So we're going to talk about personal development, but we're also going to talk about belief systems, mindsets. We're going to talk about, you know, things that hold us back. So I want to welcome Sarah. Sarah, welcome. Welcome to the show. It's so exciting to have you here.
Hi, Dawn. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I want you to tell our listeners about personal development, you know, what you specialize in and how it can help the listeners.
Well, you know, I have always been very interested in what motivates people to act the way that they act, myself included. And I've always been very, very interested in personal development from a very young age, which is what took me to grad school and then eventually into substance abuse and mental health therapy. And personal development is a way for us to better understand how it is that we show up in relationship with other people, with our peers, and with ourselves, so we can just live more freely and have less blocks to what's holding us back from living our best life and having our best experiences inside of relationships.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. And you were talking about substance abuse. And I have to say, recently, somebody added me, a peer podcaster added me to a substance abuse support group on Facebook. And I scratched my head and I thought, well, what can I offer them? You know, I work in bullying and discrimination. And I have to admit, it just went right over my head that some people reach out to substance abuse because they don't have another coping system or don't know how to cope and they abuse drugs or substance abuse. And I thought, aha, you know, I'm always learning every day. So thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the show's around bullying and discrimination solutions and empowerment, inspiration to help employees, employers, you know, even just children and adults. So somebody has certain thoughts, Sarah, you know, where they feel they're very victimized, they're going to be stuck there, they're in a rut, they'll always be harmed, abused, bullied, discriminated. What kind of advice would you give as a coach?
Well, what we dive into when it comes to coaching is really understanding someone's mindset. And, you know, particularly when someone has been in, you know, a scenario or multiple scenarios where they've been bullied, it's very easy to feel victim to the circumstance and to feel as if there is no, they don't have any control over how outcomes will play out in the future. And from a coaching standpoint, we would come from the perspective of assessing mindsets and specifically limiting beliefs.
Okay. Would you tell the audience what a limiting belief is? You and I both know, we both went to IPAC. We both become certified as coaches and we understand it. But If somebody's never heard that, what does it mean?
So I like to talk about limiting beliefs inside of what I call an operating system. And all of us, you and I included, have an operating system that essentially is a makeup of our beliefs, our behaviors, and our cognitive patterns based on how we were raised and our own life experiences. And these help to inform how we see ourselves, other people, and the world around us. Now, some of these belief systems that we form and create and are sometimes gifted to us from our families of origin and our primary caregivers are extremely supportive. And an example of a supporting belief would be, you can do anything that you put your mind to, or everyone has natural gifts and talents that are unique to them. However, there are also belief systems that can be extremely limiting, and that could look like, I'm not good at math, or no one really listens to me. And those types of belief systems can really hold someone back from moving forward and taking action. So if you can, foresee an example where a person was raised in a family and has a belief system that's very supportive, if they come up against a really challenging scenario, say inside of their relationship or at work, they might say, you know what, I'm going to go for this because I really believe that I can do this. And I believe that if I put my mind to it, I can really accomplish an outcome that's going to be in my greatest good. However, if that person was raised inside of a family of origin that has more limiting beliefs, then they might not attempt the goal. And if they do attempt the goal, they're probably not going to devote a lot of energy to it because deep down they don't really believe that they can accomplish it. So when we're looking at belief systems, supportive belief systems versus limiting belief systems can really make all the difference in terms of the goals we set for ourselves, what we achieve, and ultimately what our life can look like.
Wow, I loved how you say that. Because we have the conscious mind, and we have the unconscious mind. Do you think it's in the, which side do you think it's in that people hold back and they have this conditioning or this belief system maybe that, they can do real well, or like you said, that they can't do well. Where do you think it lies?
Well, I mean, I think initially it lies in a very unconscious place. I know, speaking from personal experience, and I always say, as coaches, we go first when it comes to working with our clients, that my belief systems were very unconscious until I started to look at them. And then you kind of bring them into the light and you recognize, oh, wow, I actually have an unconscious pattern of kind of sabotaging myself, or I've got this belief system that I didn't really know was there. And an example I can give is I unwittingly just had a limiting belief that I was terrible at math. And it almost deterred me from applying to grad school when I recognized that the social work program was very heavily math intensive. And thankfully, I had friends and family around me that pointed out to me that that was kind of a story. And that's a coaching term for a limiting belief, that I had a story that I wasn't good at math and that I should go ahead and apply to grad school anyhow. To answer your question, these limiting beliefs are tricky because they hide, but the good news is that once we bring them into our consciousness, they can't affect us anymore.
And I know we talked about math before because I know when I started school and working on advanced degree, I also had that hang up about math, but I knew it consciously. And I remember breaking out in hives over it, and it really wasn't all that bad once I got into it. It's just the stories that we buy into, it's like a record inside of us and such. So when you coach people, they're coming to you because, they want a goal, they want an outcome, they want a positive outcome. Let's say somebody's had a rough childhood, maybe their parents didn't know, they did the best they could, they didn't know any better, and they told the child, hey, you're not going to amount to much, or they were so critical that the child just, kind of stayed within themselves and they didn't get out there. And they come to you today and they said, I'm scared to do this. I really want to, I really want to be a musician, but everybody's told me I suck, or I want to, do something different. I mean, how do you get people out of that mindset that they're not good enough or they can't do something?
Well, it's really tricky because, another piece of limiting beliefs is this inner critic, this voice that lives inside of our head that tells us that we're not good enough and that we can't do something. And, really where you start with that is helping people to become aware of their thoughts because a lot a lot of times we're not even consciously aware of what we're thinking. And I'm sure you've heard this idea that the way that we talk to ourselves, we would never speak to somebody that we love like that, right? So we are really, really self-degrading inside of our own minds. So really helping people to become more consciously aware in terms of what are they telling themselves? Where is that coming from? And is it actually true? And, you know, in terms of the example that you gave, depending on how deeply patterned some of these thoughts are, there's a lot of repatterning that really needs to happen in order for somebody to really begin to believe that they do have it within them to become that musician or to go for that that raise or whatever it is that they really, really, truly want. And self-belief really starts from the ground up. So it really is twofold. It's dismantling an operating system and a set of beliefs that do not serve and that are not true. And then really building that person up in terms of helping them to connect to their true natural gifts, talents, and passions, which we all have.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I like what you said about truth. You know, is it true? I mean, is it true that if we have skill sets, you know, that we could be a musician? It's just a matter of us having the mindset to move forward. So I know your background, you've been a counselor and now you're a coach. How do the two combine help you to help other people and to empower them?
You know, I really love the combination between my background in clinical social work and the coaching modality. There's a lot of overlap there in terms of empowerment and a client's right to self-determination. But I really lead with coaching because the thought process behind that modality is that the answer that the person is seeking that I'm working with already lives inside of them. And it's up to me as the coach to ask them curious questions and to point out patterns after we have an established relationship and to help to hold them accountable to what it is that they say that they want to do. That modality, I feel like, is really, really empowering because there's not a hierarchy inside of it. It's much more of a partnership. And what I do bring from my clinical background is a lot of understanding in terms of the way that people are motivated, different cognitive blocks that they might have. I bring my background in terms of cognitive behavioral therapy into a lot of the work that I do with clients. And that kind of circles back to what we were talking about in terms of how do our thoughts, once we become aware of them, affect how we feel? And then how do our feelings end up affecting our behaviors? And really helping clients to untangle that is a part of the hybrid approach that I bring to my work with clients.
So you really tailored it to make it unique.
I have. And it actually, it's really, I see clients making really, really wonderful strides because again, I believe that people are ready to hear, some insights that somebody like myself and someone like yourself might have because we do have an educational background in terms of how people think and feel and how their behavior is motivated. I feel like people are really ready to hear that. And I feel like the traditional approaches to therapy are a little bit stale and they take a hierarchical approach where I'm the clinical therapist and I've got a bunch of information to impart to you that you don't already have, that there's somehow something wrong with you and that I need to fix you. And that is not at all what my belief system is. So the coaching modality is very empowering and it works really well.
Yeah, I can see that because what you're helping people to do is to realize that the power, their own personal power is within them, and you're just helping them to realize that. You know, about a month ago, I was in DC at a mental health conference and I met a couple of mental health professionals. And one of the things that they said to me is, we don't know how to help our people who are being bullied and discriminated and such. And I understand that because that's not necessarily their role. They have a role of listening to the person, imagine to validate their feelings and probably a whole lot more. And they do play a very important role. So as a coach, if somebody comes to you, like how many times would they see you on average if they're having a problem? Yeah.
Sure. Well, I mean, it certainly depends on the depth of the problem and what they consider the solution to look like. And again, that's completely up to the client. It's not driven by me, right? If I want to, it's not about, well, this person comes to me with an issue and I really want to see it resolved like this. So I'm going to say you need 3 months of coaching. Certainly we'll do an initial consultation and my initial calls are all complimentary for that exact reason, to kind of feel out what is this going to look like and what could this look like, because it is different in terms of traditional therapy. You make an appointment and then maybe you make another appointment and maybe you make another appointment after that. With coaching, I really like to work with people for, you know, around 2 to 3 months at least, to really help get them to a place of really understanding what it is that's holding them back. And the idea is to teach them to fish for themselves, as opposed to handing them a fish, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's one of my favorite stories. It's all about empowerment, right? I mean, I love it. And so I bet you've learned things from your clients. You know, we learn as we're teaching, as we're helping, we're empowering others as coaches. Tell me some things that you've learned just from being a coach that's made you a better person, a better leader, a better coach, even a therapist.
Absolutely. You know, one of the fundamental ideals that I live by is that everybody is a teacher and a student. And, you know, just becoming a coach and that process was so informative for me to get to understand myself better, and the process of helping other people to shed light on, you know, what's holding them back constantly is a reminder for the work that we're all doing. And, you know, I think an example that I could point to is I was working with a client recently around a limiting belief that she has, that she is terrible with money. And I think money can be intimidating to a lot of people, and that it's a limiting belief that a lot of us have. And as I mentioned earlier, I had a limiting belief that I wasn't good at math, and those two are obviously in the same wheelhouse. And she was kind of working through some of her thoughts around where did that idea come from? Where did that belief system come from? And as we talked about it, she realized that it wasn't that she's not good with money. She just doesn't like it. She has no interest whatsoever in budgeting or financing. And she literally was just like, if I could wave a magic wand, because I asked her some powerful open-ended questions around what would, you know, her relationship with money essentially look like if she could wave a magic wand, she said, I would have somebody else do it. You know, and I said, well, how would it feel to reframe the thought process that you're not good with money to, I just don't like finances. And you know, you see the light bulbs go off and she's like, oh my gosh, that's so fantastic and amazing, because not only can I put down my shame stick, right, that I'm not good with money and I'm never going to be financially solvent and independent because of that, this is a conscious choice I'm making to not really be involved with my finances because I don't like it. And watching her kind of walk through that and walking through that process with her, it's always a reminder in terms of the power of shifting our mindset and shifting our perspective. And I walked away from that call with her really inspired to continue to look at some of my own limiting beliefs and how can I shift my perspectives around things that hold me back, because I'm a coach, I'm a therapist, and I'm still a human, right? We all have things that we're working on. So I'm constantly inspired by working with my clients.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know when I first started IPAC training to become certified as a coach like you, when I went in, I realized the first thing that they did was teach us how to work on ourselves first before we could really get out there and help others. And that's one of the biggest things, takeaways that I loved about IPEC compared to other coaching programs who just teach you go out there and coach. What are your feelings on that, Sarah?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And you know, as I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, this idea that we go first, and that is something, as you mentioned, that IPEC certainly illustrated for us, that they really took us through the coaching process that we take our clients through. And I'm a firm believer that in order to really truly, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk, you need to have some of those life experiences. And I really do feel like there are a lot of helping professionals that have some fantastic intentions and they cannot really, you know, 100% relate to what their clients are going through. And while it's not necessary to help a client to be able to, you know, completely relate to where they've been, I think that it's really helpful. And it's really a powerful experience to be coached and to be in a therapeutic role where you're feeling really vulnerable and you're being asked some questions to really, you know, as the coach, to really remember what that feels like. And so you can have that empathy and that sympathy for your clients as they're going through their process. Because as I mentioned, we're all in process in our journeys. And I think one thing that I took away from IPAC that was most valuable was just the idea of absolutely no judgment. We are all on our journeys. And we all have a you know, battles that we're fighting that nobody else knows about. So to honor and respect each person for exactly where they are is a big takeaway for me from IPAC as well.
Yeah, and I remember that too about no judgment. I totally get the fact everybody's on their journey, and some people are in the beginning, some people are in the middle, some people are, you know, are further down. But I do know that, you know, if somebody's very toxic, negative in your life, you know, we have to have healthy boundaries. Do you ever discuss that with your clients about having healthy boundaries? And if you do so, could you talk without names and such just a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Boundaries is one of the first topics that I first really sunk my teeth into as a clinical therapist at the Queen's Medical Center. And it is something that's so important to understand. And there's so many other dynamics that go into boundaries in terms of understanding people-pleasing tendencies and people that have boundaries that are a little bit leaky, right? They might not be as strong in the self-advocacy arena as they might want to or as might serve them, might have some people-pleasing tendencies in terms of they're going to put other people's needs before their own, and helping people to understand how that might serve them in certain ways, right? Because all of our tendencies as human beings serve us in some way or else we wouldn't do them. And then also how those people-pleasing tendencies might not be serving them. Then the other dynamic that people run into when it comes to boundaries is having too rigid of boundaries, right? So you're not letting people in. And a lot of times when people have really rigid boundaries, it's because they've been very, very hurt in the past and they feel very untrusting. And it's completely understandable as to why. When you have really strong boundaries like that, you really do keep yourself safe. And that's the intention oftentimes when people have really, really strong boundaries with coworkers, with family members, with spouses, friends, etc. But the issue is you keep yourself safe, but you also don't allow love and support to come through those boundaries either. So boundaries are very interesting to me. And I have a whole bunch of curriculum and diagrams around them. And it's something that I really like to dive into with people. And something else that's noteworthy is that we can have different systems of boundaries depending on the groups of people that we're talking about. So maybe a client's boundaries at work can be very aggressive or rigid. And then when it comes to boundaries around relationships, they might not be as rigid, if that makes sense. So just helping people to get a little bit more keyed into and aware of what their boundary tendencies are can help them very, very quickly identify where they would like to spend some time and attention in terms of shifting how they show up inside of relationships.
Yeah. And getting back into limiting belief systems, you know, when we were both in the IPEC school, we talked about gales, we talked about gremlins. Let's talk about that area, about gremlins. You know, maybe you learned to name your gremlin a name, and let's talk about how gremlins can, that's just a nickname, people, but how gremlins can almost be like that little devil on your shoulder saying you're not good enough, you're not smart enough and such. What's been your experience about gremlins and gales? And we'll explain that to the audience.
Absolutely. So when Dawn and I are talking about gales, this is an IPEC term essentially in the social work world, which would be called cognitive blocks. And GALE is an acronym for gremlin, assumption, interpretation, and limiting beliefs. And limiting beliefs we've touched on. The gremlin is the big daddy, so to speak. And another name for that is the inner critic. And essentially, this is the voice that lives inside of your head, and it has a lot of power over how we think, what we feel, and how we behave. And gremlins are extremely deep-seated. They're very complex. They usually were, you know, originated at some point in childhood for a very, very specific reason that was very supportive of us at the time. So an example of this could be a child that is raised inside of a family where dad is not extremely supportive of their capacity and capability to really succeed. And anytime the child would try to go out and do something new and kind of fail or fall on their face, dad would come in and say, "See, I told you so." And that type of ridicule was so detrimental to the child that they essentially stopped trying those new things because it wasn't worth it to them. It wasn't worth it to their psyche and to their emotional state of balance to continue to receive that type of feedback from dad. And so thus the gremlin is born, that I'm not good enough, so I might as well not try. And you can see how that supported that child in childhood in terms of keeping them safe from dad's ridicule. But if you follow that child into the teenage years and into adulthood, if they have this gremlin that's really deep-seated, they're not going to really stretch themselves and expand into a life that could really support them.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody says, okay, I know I have a limiting belief, you know, that I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy enough, and they're just scared to pieces because they've had years of conditioning that, no, play it safe, you know, go work a government job or go work at the post office or go work at the mill. And that person really wants to be, for example, an entrepreneur or do something so very different. How do they move through the fear?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And I will say, and I wish that this wasn't the truth, but working through some of these really, really deep-seated fears that hold us back that have been conditioned from childhood take a while, right? It's not a light switch. And essentially, you start with the fear. Fear really needs to be looked at and released. It's just like anxiety. It's just like anger. Once you start to look at it, which is exactly what it doesn't want, by the way, it starts to get smaller and it starts to dissipate. But our tendency naturally is to avoid what's uncomfortable. And so when we're really, really fearful of something, we avoid it and it gets bigger. So the very beginning stage of working with a client in that respect is to start to really look at the fear and to assess, you know, how true is it? How real is it? And try to take some of the power and the punch out of it. And again, it's a twofold process where we're decreasing the fear, or essentially we're getting real with it. How real is this fear? And at the same time, building up the scaffolding and the belief system that they need to make the choices that are really, really, truly going to support them in living the life that they really want to, and not being held back by some of these cognitive blocks that we have based on our own life experiences. And again, some of them are gifted, quote unquote, to us inside of our family of origin. So it's a process is the short answer.
It absolutely is a process, and healing and growing and personal growth takes a lot of time. And you talked about something earlier. What about accountability for somebody that wants to personally grow?
Well, this is something that I really like when it comes to the coaching modality. And you hear the word accountability and it sounds a little bit stringent, but inside of coaching, it's just this idea of, I'm going to ask my client what it is that they say they want to accomplish in the next 2 days, in the next week, in the next month, right? And I really help my clients figure out what is a SMART goal, right? What is it? What's attainable? Is it time sensitive? Is it realistic? And the next time we talk, I'll ask them, hey, how did that go for you? Or, you know, actually, I'll even ask them, hey, do you want me to send you a text message? How do you want to be held accountable? And it's not about, I can't believe that you didn't accomplish the goal that you said that you were going to. It's just about asking a question so they can So they know that somebody is going to be asking that question, right? And a lot of times if somebody hasn't done what they say they're going to do, again, this comes back to the no judgment space. There's a lot of information inside of that in terms of where's the resistance to that person accomplishing what it is that they say that they want to, right? Because we all have self-sabotaging tendencies. And usually when we're not accomplishing a goal, there's a really big reason for it. And understanding the why can be really, really important. It's interesting, you know, once we figure out what's holding us back, attaining the goals that we really, really want to attain becomes relatively easy because we all are smart and intelligent people and we know how to do things and we know how to accomplish our goals. It's just understanding what's holding us back from doing that usually is what's getting in our way.
Yeah, sure. And I'm sure you probably have had people that have just reached out to you as a coach that did not want to be accountable, that they just kind of wanted you to fix their problems, surely? Or maybe not?
Surely, yes, absolutely. And, you know, that is just not the way that the coaching modality is set up. And I actually have written an article about the dangers of entering into any sort of a therapeutic or healing relationship when you are really hoping that that person is going to solve your problems, because that's a really big indicator that you are actually not quite ready to do that work, because it has to be self-directed. And if you're really looking for somebody to give you the answers, don't get me wrong, there are therapists out there that will do that. And that's just not my brand of support. That's not the brand of support that I offer to people, because I believe that you have to be really invested and bought into your own process. You have to be more bought into it than I do, right? I'm here to guide and to help. And if I've got information that I think can really help you based on my educational background, am I going to point that out and say that? Absolutely. Do I have curriculum? Do I have homework? Do I have suggestions? Absolutely. But am I going to give the answer? No.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I've had people who've contacted me and they just want to complain. And you know, I'm an action taker and I'm all about accountability. And I'm like, if you want to, you know, hold yourself accountable and, you know, the best investment, I think, you know, I believe in education being a good investment, is the investment of becoming your best version of yourself. So one of the things in your bio, it says that Sarah works with her clients to blow the doors off of what is holding them back so they make this life its absolute best. Uh-huh. You know, we talked about your coaching and stuff, but there's probably even more that you haven't talked about. How do you make people's life the best? Well, I should say, how should you empower them?
Because how can I empower them? Right, exactly. And kind of looping back to what you're saying, the reason why I can't give the answer, so to speak, to make somebody else's life the best is because I don't actually believe I have the answer. I believe that they do. But it's funny to listen to some of my web copy, you know, be read out loud. And the reason why I use such strong language in terms of blowing the doors off of what's holding them back is because that's the work that I've done myself. So mm-hmm. I have a colorful past myself in terms of things that I've had to work through and things that I've had to look at and processes that I have had to go through to really to get to a place of conscious awareness around the choices that I'm making that serve me and that don't. And I know that the process I've gone through has blown the doors off of my personal experience on the planet as a human and inside of my relationships and inside of the work that I do. And so that's precisely what I bring to my work with clients.
And that's very, very cool. I love how you put blowing off the doors and such. That's so important for people to know that they have so much power inside and sometimes they just need a good mentor, a coach. Let's talk about coaching. There are a lot of people out there, Sarah, you and I know, they don't necessarily have to have, you know, a certification in coaching or anything like that. But how does somebody find the right coach for them?
That's a great question. And honestly, I would answer it the same as if you were asking me how does somebody find a great therapist for them, and you just try it on. You know, I feel like the personalities of the person that you are coaching And if you're looking for a coach, it really has to fit. You have to feel comfortable with them, because if you don't feel comfortable, you're not going to open up, and therefore you're not going to be receiving all that you can from the therapeutic relationship. And that's just wasting your time and money, and everyone's time and money is extremely valuable to them. So that's one of the reasons why I offer complimentary initial sessions, is because I don't want somebody to sign on with me, and vice versa. I don't want to sign on with a client unless I know it's going to be a really good fit. And you're only going to know that after you have a session or two. So if you're somebody that's looking for a coach or looking for a therapist, and you know that you are ready to do some of this work, my suggestion would be to set up two or three appointments with different coaches to see the flow and to see how the personalities mesh. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that, because some people will not resonate with me, or they may not resonate with you, but they may resonate with someone else. And we really do want them to get the outcome and the positive outcome or goal, whatever they're trying to achieve. Now, I've written articles myself about finding the right coach, because I know people out there that have not been trained, whether, through their own personal training, they don't have the background. It's a money thing for them, and I've seen them cause harm. In fact, I know when I first started getting into coaching, I had hired a business coach, and I'm a little guilty of not doing a little better research, but I just felt this person could really help me, and I knew I wanted to work in coaching around personal power, around bullying discrimination, trying to help people become empowered. And this person who called themselves a coach was never a coach. And they tried to make me a generalist life coach, which, I would have fizzled out. We can't work in something that doesn't light our fire, fuel our passion. But what other advice would you give to avoid these people who are calling themselves coaches that really are hurting and harming people, taking their money? And I think it's important people to know. We don't have to say names or anything like that, but what do we watch out for out there so that people don't get taken advantage of when it comes to coaching?
I think it's a very good point to bring up. So at this point, coaching is an unregulated industry, as you well know, versus social work or psychiatry. There are governing bodies that are that license social workers and therapists and counselors and marriage and family therapists to be sure that they have the credentials that are necessary. And the coaching industry, while I believe it's moving in that direction, is not currently regulated as such. And to speak to your point, I think that you need to vet your coach, right? Go to their website, take a look at their credentials. I mean, again, obviously you and I both went to IPEC and we chose IPEC. I can make an assumption without even asking you, because it is the best in the field and they are regulated by the ICF. And so they've done everything they can to be sure that their curriculum is as above board as possible. But not all coaching programs are created equal, and people can absolutely go out and hang a shingle and say, I'm a coach, and not even have gone to school. And that is extremely scary to me, particularly because I do have the social work background and I do have a lot of regulation on my other licenses, to think that there are people out there offering up coaching as a modality and a helping modality when they don't, I mean, they haven't even picked up a book or attended an online class. So my suggestion again would be to vet the coach, go to their website. If they don't have a website, move on. Or at very least, do what you can to figure out what sort of educational background do they have, and how much credibility, is their word? How credible are they?
Yeah, because there's some very convincing people out there that do not deserve to be coaching, and they may have a website, but would you say it's fair to ask for some references?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's fair to ask for whatever it is that you need to feel comfortable.
Yeah. Well, as we're wrapping up, tell me, is there any burning words, something you're very passionate about that you would like to impart to the listeners as we wrap up? And then we're going to talk about your contact information and what you're up to these days.
Great. I think the only thing that I would want to really drive home is this connection between what we think and how we feel and how we behave. And I have permission to use a really quick example from a client that I've worked with, and I just think it really, really illustrates the power of this. And so what happened was, one of my clients, her cat got out of her house, and her cat is very old, and it was in the dead of winter, and she automatically started thinking that something terrible had happened to the cat. It had come to terrible ends, and she was really, really having a hard time. She spent a week in a really deep depression. She had a conversation with her children about the fact that the cat had passed away and was never going to come back, and she was just completely distraught and beside herself. And we did a little bit of coaching and reframed some of her thoughts, what else is possible, et cetera, et cetera. But as you can imagine, she just was sitting in a place of really deep sadness, right? Because of these thoughts that she was having. Two days later, the cat shows up at the front door
Oh, goodness.
and is completely fine. And the next door neighbor had taken the cat in and fed it and bathed it and just had taken a couple of days to figure out where the cat lived. And so essentially, because of the thoughts that this person was having, she ended up feeling some really deep, distressing feelings and then making some choices, right, in terms of having discussions with kids and other people about what was happening with the cat, all for naught, all based on the thoughts that she was having. And so I really love that example because it really drives home the power of our thoughts to inform how we feel and then inform how we make our choices moving forward. And so the key behind, I always say consciousness raising 101 is really getting in touch with what your thoughts are. And that is really some of the primary work that I do with clients. So I just wanted to throw that example out there.
Yeah, and that's a good example because when you said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just went through that. Less than a week ago, I could not find my cat. It's a Persian cat, and it's a rescue animal, and I had left the front door open, and I'm in Asheville, North Carolina, where I have bears that live, right down the road from me. I just saw a fox running down the road, and my mind went to the very, very, very worst. And I'm just trying to calm down and not get hysterical because, my pets are very dear to me. They're like my children. And
Course.
so I'm up and down in the road in my truck looking for the cat, thinking, oh my God, I got to find this cat before the fox finds it. Before I didn't, well, bears usually don't eat cats, but I'm like, ah. Then I went back to the house, walked in, calmed down, took a deep breath, and slowed down. And my intuition said, go check in the other bedroom. And my cat was in the other bedroom laying on a book shelf, and
Oh my goodness.
I was like, okay, there you went. You let your mind go. You thought the worst. And sometimes it's hard to control the mind. You get that broken record that goes round and round and round, and you go to the worst of the worst of the worst. And all this time, my cat was sleeping on the bookshelf. And I took a big breath of relief. I'm like, oh, thank you goodness, thank goodness. And then I started laughing at myself about, see how silly you get when you let your mind just run and run and run. So I'm glad you brought that story up because I've
Yes.
experienced it too. So
Well, I'm so glad that your cat is okay. And I think it's
it's
just a great
okay.
illustration that we all let our minds go to that place. The key is catching it before we get into a deep depression or a frenzy and then start making choices from that place. That's the key.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's very important for us to be mindful of our thoughts. We're not going to be able to stop every thought. They say, psychiatrists say, or psychologists say, we get 60,000, 70,000 thoughts, and many of them could be scary and negative, and we can reframe it, as you used that word earlier, rethink it, and it could be a very positive thing. So we have to be able to stop that record and say, nope, not going there. And I choose to be empowered. I choose to think this way. And then when you're not feeling the victim mode, that's when the beautiful things in our life happen. That's when we grow and such. Sarah, it's been such a pleasure. It's such an honor to work with another, and have you on my podcast, another coach, especially one who's been through IPEC coaching. So, if anybody would like to be able to reach out for that complimentary session, or they may want to hire you, or do you have any events, books, anything that you want to share with the audience at this time? We'd love to hear what you have.
Great. Well, and Dawn, I also wanted to say thank you. It's been such a pleasure to be on with you and to have such great conversations about limiting beliefs and thought processes and all the things, because It's just really, really important topics of conversation. If people are interested in learning more about me, I believe that there will be a link attached to the podcast, but sarahzarin.com is my web address. And there are ways to contact me there in terms of email and cell phone. If you are interested in signing up for a complimentary session, you can reach out like that. If you want to stay connected, you can also sign up for my newsletter. And the way that you do that is you pop your email address into the field on the front page. And what that will also end up giving you is a PDF that I created that offers insider coaching tips that you can start to implement now, which again, pretty in-depth. So go ahead and sign up for that. That'll be a great way to kind of keep you looped in. And then also there will be information coming up about a program that I'm launching in the fall called Through the Looking Glass, where we're going to address a lot of what we discussed here today in terms of cognitive blocks and limiting beliefs, and really helping to illuminate what holds people back from living their best life, and then expand that operating system, expand their belief system to be more supportive, and then ascend into the best versions of themselves. So there are a couple of ways that people can kind of stay connected if they're interested in the topics that we discussed here today.
Yeah, one thing too, Sarah, I know how to spell your name, but if somebody's trying to find your website, spell your name so they know how to find your website easily.
Great. It's Sarah Zarin, Sarah, Z as in zebra, Eren.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. It's been great talking to you. You're very enlightening and very educational. I know the listeners probably will learn many things from this talk, this interview. So for everybody, when you have that negative thought in your mind and you want to start catching yourself when these thoughts come in your mind, you can do something as easy as I do. I put mindful thought notes around the house and I'll see it and it'll remind me, oh yeah, if I'm getting worried about something or something is bothering me, that I can reframe. As Sarah said, I can reframe those thoughts and make them empowering ones. So stay tuned to the next episode. Thank you, Sarah, and everyone have an empowering day. Thank you for listening to the Empowered Whistleblower. As your host, I will continue to bring in the best experts to share their knowledge and empower our listeners. Nobody has to feel like a victim. There are solutions to bullying and discrimination. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. All our future shows will offer practical guidance so that anyone can choose to stand up to bullying and discrimination. You deserve to be happy, and life is all about choices. I always welcome comments and suggestions for new shows. Please comment and share your ideas, and be sure to come back for more inspiration and empowerment. I am Dawn-Marie Westmoreland signing off and wishing you much happiness and empowerment in your day.